This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thanks very much. We'll be switching gears with this talk from vein graft failure issues to that of endovascular interventions. I'll be discussing anatomical and physiological factors affecting patency after tibial intervention. So I think the clinical issue that we're discussing in this case is related to this. An example where a patient had a significant infrapopliteal disease that was treated with angioplasty with, as you see in the middle panel, what looks like a pretty reasonable result. There's certainly some recoil, but there's adequate flow down the vessel that should affect wound healing. However, what we don't understand sometimes is why you might obtain an excellent angiographic result, and then if you come back and do an angiogram a few months later, or perhaps because of clinical symptoms, see this all too common situation where there's evident reocclusion of both of those vessels. So what are the mechanisms of restenosis after infrapopliteal balloon angioplasty? Well, certainly much has been written on this and studied in the basic science and translational literature, but really there are two main mechanisms that we're considering. The first is elastic recoil. This occurs within minutes after balloon angioplasty, and the reality is that some recoil occurs in all arteries. And this issue of elastic recoil is a major limitation of balloon angioplasty as a standalone therapy. The second issue that we see as more of a long-term problem over the course of weeks to months is that of neointimal proliferation due to the migration and proliferation of smooth muscle cells. So what is the prevalence of elastic recoil, and how much of a problem is it from a clinical standpoint? Well, some of the most recent data that I found on this was 30 patients undergoing infrapopliteal balloon angioplasty. These patients were treated with a standard balloon angioplasty of 3 minutes duration and then had angiograms obtained immediately afterwards and then 15 minutes later as well. And essentially, all of these patients had some evidence of elastic recoil, 97% of them, and the mean recoil was 29%. And interestingly, although this was not a randomized study, there was more pronounced effect of recoil in diabetic patients as well, again suggesting that recoil may be a more clinically significant issue among diabetic patients. Here's a visual depiction of that. In this patient with a short segment occlusion of their infrapopliteal vessel, they underwent focal balloon angioplasty, and the acute result was pretty reasonable, but within 15 minutes, you can see that along that entire segment of the balloon angioplasty area, there was significant recoil in the range of between 30 to 50%. In this case, that was treated with additional post-dilation, and at least acutely and over the course of 15 minutes, there appeared to be less recoil as a result of more prolonged additional balloon angioplasty. Now, whether this is associated with better long-term patency, we don't yet have the answer for. So what about neointimal proliferation? Well, this is a very large area of research, and we understand that a lot of this is due to smooth muscle cell migration and proliferation in response to vascular injury. And there are a whole host of physiologic factors that integrate onto this. As we all know, this includes diabetes, lesion length, intervention to an occlusion, as well as chronic kidney disease, all mediate higher rates of restenosis, whether that's through a greater inflammatory response or subsequent smooth muscle cell proliferation, or the integration of that with subsequent thrombosis, I think is a complex interplay. And it's really here where there's an opportunity for drug delivery, and that could be potentially through drug-eluting stents, through drug-coated balloons, or novel therapies such as delivery of adventitial dexamethasone or other anti-inflammatory agents to the site of balloon angioplasty. So with that background of the mechanisms underlying restenosis, what are the actual patency rates that we see after tibial artery angioplasty? Well, some of the best data that we have on this was derived from a planned angiographic follow-up after real-world balloon angioplasty. In this series of 77 tibial arteries with a mean lesion length of 184 millimeters, and 65% of which were occlusions, the patients underwent successful balloon angioplasty, and at 3 months, there was clinical improvement in 76% of those patients. However, with defined angiographic follow-up, it was found that reocclusion had occurred in 38%, and there was a stenosis greater than 50% in 31% of patients. So this again gets somewhat to the disconnect between what we see with patency and clinical improvement, in the sense that although 3/4 of the patients had clinical improvement, you basically had restenosis or occlusion in 2/3 of the patients. So what about with shorter lesions? That was a real-world cohort of patients. We also have a lot of trial data from recent studies of infrapopliteal balloon angioplasty. One of those studies was the IMPACT Deep Study of balloon angioplasty versus a paclitaxel-coated balloon for infrapalpitoyl interventions. That study had a shorter cohort of lesions that were a mean length of between 100 and 120 millimeters, and about a third of them were total occlusions. And in that cohort, the rates of binary restenosis, defined as a 50% stenosis or more at 12 months, were a little lower. It was 41% versus 35%. And the rates of reocclusion were 11 and 16%. And based on that, the clinically driven need for repeat intervention was approximately 12 to 14%. So these results actually were much better and were unexpectedly good in the sense that these are relatively short lesions, and interestingly did not show any benefit of paclitaxel-coated balloon angioplasty in this setting. What about the clinically driven need for repeat revascularization? In one of the larger cohorts of 128 patients with a mean lesion length of 79 millimeters, the rates of reintervention clinically were about 42% at 1 year and 46% at 2 years, with major amputation rates of 11%. And interestingly, when predictors of angiographic restenosis were identified in this cohort, in addition to the usual lesion characteristics, importantly, as was mentioned earlier, the administration of a statin was a predictor of decreased rates of restenosis. And it remains somewhat controversial whether restenosis itself is associated with worse clinical outcomes, because it likely depends somewhat on the timing of the restenosis as well. But in this cohort of patients, the mean time to wound healing was 66 versus 127 days for those patients who remained free of restenosis versus those who developed restenosis, again suggesting that the time course of the clinical improvement is improved with better patency. So how can we at least modify some of these factors for restenosis? Well, I think as was mentioned earlier, prescribing statins and potentially high-dose statins in all of these patients is critical. We have some data from registries of patients treated with statins with critical limb ischemia that suggest improved primary patency out to 2 to 3 years. That was also seen in a cohort of patients that we looked at specifically with infrapopliteal interventions. And then finally, we all recognize that diabetes is associated with decreased patency in both femoral popliteal and infrapopliteal interventions. There are likely multiple mechanisms, including increased platelet activation and increased smooth muscle cell proliferation, and a possible confounding role of insulin use. In our own data, we looked at 309 infrapopliteal lesions among patients with diabetes and measured their fasting blood glucose on the day of the procedure. The median value of that fasting glucose was 144. And interestingly, those patients that had a fasting glucose below the median had significantly improved patency out to a year of 45% versus only 16%. There also appeared to be a dose response effect in that this was dependent on the quartile of the fasting blood glucose, again suggesting that the acute glucose milieu at the time of infrapopliteal intervention may be a driver of the subsequent inflammatory response. And I think interestingly raises the question of whether intervening and providing tight glucose control at the time of intervention might limit subsequent restenosis. There was also a trend towards an improvement in major adverse limb events among patients with better glucose control. So in conclusion, restenosis rates remain high after infrapopliteal balloon angioplasty. There is increasing evidence clinically that restenosis is important in the treatment of critical limb ischemia and ultimately limb preservation. These include lesion-related factors that are out of our control, including the intervention to an occlusion, the length, and the diameter of the lesion, but also patient-related factors that we may be able to intervene on, such as statin use and fasting glucose. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.